It's Tuesday the 7th of March 2007. This is John Fares of Gloucester Rugby Heritage, and I have with me Chris Collier from the project. We're at King's Home today to talk to Graham Spring, for nearly 40 years, the voice of Gloucester Rugby. Good morning, Graham.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Chris.
I think we'd like to start by talking a little bit about your background. You're from Painswick, I think.
Born and bred in Painswick, attended the local school until going through the 11 plus, and then I went to Stroud Boys Tech, which is now probably better known as Marling. And from there, I went to work with British Gas.
Mm-hmm. Rugby connections. Did you were you a rugby player at Marling?
No, when it was Stroud Boys, Marling was a separate school at the time, and they played rugby. At Stroud Boys Tech, we played football. My level of talent at football did not see me in the school teams. My talent at rugby saw me play something in the region of 5 or 6 games for Painswick seconds. But whilst I had some reasonable ability at cricket and golf, football, rugby eluded me totally.
That's interesting. And you talk about playing for Painswick Seconds, the original Cherry and Whites.
Very much so. It was a Coates stroke Seconds team, and they probably only had half a dozen fixtures a year. My brother Derek was very prominent in the Painswick First 15, and he was part of the combination cup-winning team in the 50s here. Mm-hmm. So always brought up in a rugby family, but with no talent of the game for myself.
Yet, you became, I can quote you, I think, a manic supporter of Gloucester Rugby.
Like it or not, as a schoolboy, my father and brother, my brother when not playing, brought me to King's Home to stand in the shed. And rugby was the game that I watched, and Gloucester was my team.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember when you came down to King's Home first?
My word, no. The first memories I have were of... first big memory I have was a game against Coventry. It was so crowded that we stood on the tump end, and George Cole was playing for Coventry, so I guess we're going back a fair few years.
Yeah. Not before us, though.
Was that the game when he kicked us out of it? And I think we scored 4 tries to 1, and George Cole kicked us out of it. I think they just scored the 1 try and given 11 points for kicks by him.
Your memory is far better than mine. My only memory is of being on the tump,
yeah,
and Coventry being the opposition, and Coventry, of course, being a very big team.
Yeah. I remember an awful lot of games in which George Cole kicked us out of the game. Not just Gloucester, either, the county as well. Yeah, he was a phenomenal kicker.
Indeed.
For the day.
Indeed.
You know, in heavy conditions with the heavy ball. You know, he was a remarkable player. Yeah, so what do you remember about early Gloucester players?
Again, years blend together, but one of my favourite players was always Don Rutherford. Mm-hmm. I remember the likes of Peter Ford playing in the back row. My greatest memory recall, I guess, comes a little later in the Mike Nichols era, mm-hmm, and particularly the year of 72 when we won the John Player Cup, playing each and every match away from King's Home.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was a tremendously exciting time for Gloucester supporters, because I don't think we could believe what was happening, quite honestly. London Welsh and Coventry were just giants, weren't they, in the club game at that time?
I don't think we were given a chance at Old Deer Park against London Welsh, what, virtually the Welsh international team at the time.
Yeah.
But again, one of my favourite players, Mike Nichols, I can remember throughout that cup run, and I was young, but I could see that that man was the driving force behind the team.
Yeah. And there was Mike Potter.
Indeed.
Amazing character.
Oh, very much so.
Yes. He came from nowhere, didn't he, really? But he came from Coney Hill Rugby Club in his mid-20s.
Mm.
But, you know, he was tremendous in that cup run.
And am I right in remembering John Bayliss in the centre, laying someone out very early in the semi-final at Coventry? But John didn't leave people untouched, did he?
No, I seem to remember the radio. I didn't get to that game, but I heard it on the radio. And I seem to remember a very biased radio commentary in favour of Coventry, and horror expressed at the physicality of Gloucester.
Oh, for that today.
Yes.
I think that was in the first minute, wasn't it?
Gittings. It was. I was lucky enough to be there, and I was thinking in terms of we're going to be one short here, because it was borderline, in my opinion. But wow, what a hit!
Yeah. Well, I often thought that was down to the way Mike Nichols used to work them up. Apparently, before the game, tremendous leadership. He worked them up to a frenzy, I think.
I will accept no argument that Mike Nichols, Gloucester's best ever captain in my days, anyway.
Yeah.
Motivational.
So you came to Gloucester as a supporter in the 70s, and eventually you became the voice on the tannoy.
Yes, officially stadium announcer now.
Sorry, yes.
1st of September 1978, I joined Gloucester RFC officially. The 4 years prior to that, I was at King's Home providing live commentary for all Gloucester home matches for Cotswold Hospital Radio. At the end of the 77-78 season, the funding was withdrawn, and I had to go along to the then Secretary Terry Tandy, A, to thank him for allowing us to do the commentaries and all the hospitality they'd given us over the 4 years, and B, to explain to him why we were leaving. And his only words were, "Thank you very much, you talk very well, do you want a job?" And that's how it started. And he said, "Well, come back, first match, September the 1st, thereabouts, come back." And that was it. 39 seasons later, I'm sat with you guys, a little higher up in King's Home than I would have been in those days.
Yes. So what was it like in those days? Where was the car? I can't remember now where the commentary position even was.
Well, it's varied over the years. In those days, the only microphone was in the office at the back of the old stand.
Mm-hmm.
I used to sit in the end seat of the press box. Every time there was a score, I ran down the steps into the back office, announced it, and then ran back up again. After that, we had a wooden shed, a typical wooden garden shed, on top of the old clubhouse roof. No one thought that the glass would steam up with me and a technician in there. So come high sunshine or deep rain, most of the match was spent outside because we couldn't see through the glass. And then eventually we went in, after John Fiddler had built the hospitality boxes on the tump end, right in the far corner there was a storage room with a small window looking out, and until this new stand that we're sat in now was built, I did the work from there.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm on the gantry way above the pitch. This is a dream compared with the three other previous locations.
I can imagine. So where were you when you were actually doing the hospital radio commentary? You were
in the press box, but a little further along, and it was done via phone line.
Mm-hmm.
And very exciting times. And the final commentary we did was from Twickenham on the 1978 Cup Final.
All right. Yeah. Well, it was a good way to go out, I guess.
It was an excellent way to go out. And as I say, Terry had a vacancy and he asked me if I'd do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when did things expand into doing interviews and things like that?
In the last, let's go back a step. In the mid 90s, there was a feeling that we ought to expand the role, and then Tom Walkinshaw took over the company, and without being rude in any way, he became very dictatorial about the things that we did. And it was only after his demise that we went into the helter-skelter life that I have now. Mm. It was Pete Grzonka who introduced the player interviews prior to the game. Mike Turner, who's still here, who introduced things such as talking to someone at halftime, the man of the match presentations. So in basic terms, the main body of the job as it is known now has probably only been in place for the last 10 or 11 years. Previously to that, it was down to whoever was in charge. One example being when Mike Teague had his short tenure as coach here, one of the things that he insisted upon was that no latest scores were given during the match. He felt that it was a distraction to the players. Tom Walkinshaw dictated that we would not introduce the players onto the pitches of Cherry and Whites. He said, we are Gloucester Rugby and that's how you will present the team. And I would love to go back to introducing the Cherry and Whites, but either nobody's suggested it or I've not had the courage to ask if I can do it. So the job has expanded greatly but over the years, but mainly the last 10, 11 years in its present form.
Tom Walkinshaw seemed to have a little bit of an obsession about the Cherry and Whites, because we came up against that brick wall as well. We wanted to promote the Cherry and White name and the Cherry and White image as well, and there was some attempt to say, well, they're not even the Cherry and Whites, they're the Red and Whites. And this was just nonsense.
I'm amongst friends here. It was a Cherry and Whites when I appeared, and it's still the Cherry and Whites to me now.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how Gloucester are perceived all around the country. All the newspaper reports refer to us as the Cherry and Whites. Everybody who knows anything about rugby, if you said to them what team are the Cherry and Whites, they'd say Gloucester.
Yeah, well, this was breaking news for you. On my last day here, whenever that may be, I'm going to introduce the team as the Cherry and Whites, because on my last day they can't sack me.
Well, let's hope that's a very long time in the future.
Thank you.